everyone. Welcome to tonight's Pep Talk. I'm so excited to see you guys. So glad that you could be here to join me tonight. I am alone in the house tonight. Sad me. Because Rachel is out and she's with family. It's Maundy Thursday, which I realize a lot of people are probably at church tonight. And, you know, I hadn't thought about that before I scheduled this. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to church. And then I was like, no, I'm not. I'm doing Pep Talk. So anyway, but we're recording it. So hopefully those that are there will get it and we'll have a good time tonight. I know that Beth, who often joins us, is also driving home from Seattle. So I'm batching it tonight. So it'll just be me babbling on to you. So I hope you have a good conversation in the chat so I can kind of, you know, answer some of your questions as we go. We do have, my son is running the chat tonight, Susan Warren 2. So that's the others. That's not me cloned. That's, well, I mean, maybe, but that's David running the chat. So feel free to ask Gwen questions. So shoot them to me and it'll be all good. So anyway, I'm really glad to see you guys tonight. It's going to be a good class. I don't know, because Rachel's not here, it might be shorter than usual. We'll see. But I have a lot of content tonight to go through. And I'm, you know, as I was putting it together, there's so many times when I'm writing a book, and I'm in the middle of writing a book right now. I'm just actually finishing it. I finished the rough draft last week before I went to Chicago, and then I came home and I started, and I read it while I was on the plane and everything, so I could take some notes and kind of get a feel for it. And I really love to do that after I write a book. If you haven't done that, if you ever get stuck in a story where you're going along and you're like, you know, I don't know if I like the story or not, what I often do is take it, I throw it onto my Kindle, and I start reading it like a regular book. And I might take some notes in the margins, but I turn off my internal editor and I just read it and I see if I like it. Do I like the characters? Do I like the story? Do I like the plot? Are there enough twists and turns? And that really helps me know, okay, have I built the right kind of story? And it gives me a good feel for it. So then when I come back to editing it, I know, okay, I'm going in the right direction. And I know what changes to make and stuff like that. So it's really important, I think, to get that flow. So wherever you are in your process, I would suggest at some point sitting down just to read your story, because I think you'll enjoy it and you kind of fall in love with it again when you realize, oh, this is a great story, you know? So anyway, that's where I'm at right now. But one thing I've realized is that there's so many layers to creating a character. I mean, there's the basics, which we're going to talk about tonight, but there's also these add-ons, which we're also going to be talking about tonight. And knowing who your character is and building that powerful bio is so important before you start a story, because as you get in, you're going to discover even more layers. And if you haven't built a solid foundation, then you're going to have to go back and start from scratch. So that's what we're going to be talking tonight, is building that strong bio for your character. And how do you go about doing that? So I've got my good friend, Steve Amell, here. Actually, I really don't know Steve Amell, but I would love to know Steve Amell, mostly because I love The Arrow and I'm a huge Arrow fan. And I know that some of my fellow MBTers are as well, especially some folks that were at the Deep Thinkers Retreat with me, Donna. And so it's really fun to kind of share some insights from Arrow tonight. If you haven't watched Arrow, it's, you know, it's a CW show, right? So it's a comic book show. It's DC Comics. But there's some pretty good character development that has been going on for the last 5 seasons. And whether you like the story or whether you like the way that the writers go about it, the character development is really powerful. So that's why I thought I would kind of talk about that tonight. So if you haven't seen Arrow, then, you know, that's fine. You can learn something tonight. You might want to start watching it. If you have seen Arrow, I'm going to try not to give anything away because I am completely caught up now. So I will try not to give you any spoilers. But Arrow has a fantastic bio. So the story, let's go back to why a strong bio is so important. So a great story is always about the journey of the character going from a broken place to a whole place. Now, obviously, if you have a series of books and it features just one character like Arrow does. Now, Arrow has a cast of characters, but the main character is Oliver Queen. And Oliver Queen is this wonderfully broken character that continues to heal a little bit more in every season. And it's the same way if you're writing a series of books with one main protagonist. You are going to heal them just a little bit more in every single book. Now, you might have new problems that arise that they need to heal from, the loss of someone they love, or an injury, or a, you know, some Often in television shows, they'll have like a criminal that continues to come back and plague the main character. You can do that sort of thing. But what happens is that when you're in a series, your character is still going from broken to whole. They're just taking it in much smaller steps in a longer stage. Now, in a novel, your character, and it's just the one novel, your character is going from broken to whole in that whole novel. Now, if I'm doing something where I'm like the Christensen family series, I had 3 stories that had Casper and Raina in them. And Casper and Raina, Casper was this middle child of the Christensen family. And I had a subplot with he and Raina in one book. And then I had the main plot in the next book. And then I had yet another subplot with them in another book. And that's because I did that same thing. They were broken. They got really broken in the first subplot. They got kind of put together in the second one, but still had some issues to deal with. And then I had the third one that where they healed their brokenness. So you can stretch it out over a couple books, especially if you have reoccurring characters in a series, that works out as well. But the point is that they must go from broken to whole throughout the story journey, because if they don't, then you don't have a story. And that's the whole point. That's why we love characters, is because they have this broken place inside of them, and we want to see how they get put back together. So in order to do that, we need a few things before we start the story, where there's things that we must know as an author, not necessarily a reader, but as an author, we must know a few things about our character. The first is that, why is your character broken? What is going on with him that he is so broken? What broken place does he have? And then we want to know how he got so broken. We want to know the story behind that, because that's so pivotal to building the rest of the plot. And then we also want to know what steps are going to lead him to wholeness. Now, the reader doesn't want to know this. The reader wants to find this out on the story. But you as the author need to know it so that you can start planning his steps to wholeness. Now, I want to say here, you might not know what those steps are at the very beginning. You might know a couple big ones, but you will find them out along the way. And that is sometimes the fun about writing a story, is discovering how your character is going from broken to whole. Like right now, I'm writing a scene where my hero starts to realize that he has all this darkness inside of him. And the heroine keeps feeding him light and in the way of truth, in the way of inspiration. And what I'm talking about is truth from the gospel. And so what happens is that eventually he thinks, oh, that's just who she is. Finally, he realizes, oh, no, wait, there's a deeper source of light inside of her, and that's what's causing him to break free. Well, I didn't really understand how that was going to work out until I got into the story, and I realized, oh, that's how it's going to work out. So you don't have to know everything going into the story. And so for those that like to pants their way through, you don't have to. That's great. You don't have to know everything. For those that like to plot your way through, you can kind of pull out some of those pieces and put them on the journey so that you know what they are. But just keep yourself flexible to what the journey demands as you're going. All right. So let's keep talking through, and let's just start with understanding the journey of your character from broken to whole. There are 3 parts of your character's journey that you have to think about as you're building your story. The first one is his external story. Okay, so that's the one in the middle, and that is the spine or the external events that happen in your story. So your character has a goal, he sets out on his journey, certain things happen that are obstacles on the way to the finish line, to reaching his goal. He may or may not reach his goal depending on how the story goes, but the point is that the external journey is what glues the rest of the story together. So this external journey is the visible plot that you're going to put your character on. Now, alongside of that, you're going to have this spiritual journey. And the spiritual journey is that journey that's really the crux of the story, where your character is going from the lie he believes to the truth that sets him free. And even if you're not writing an inspirational book, you still have a lie-truth combination. It's just that the lie-truth combination isn't necessarily built on spiritual values. Although you would find that truth is still truth. And so even if there's not a scripture or something in the story, which there doesn't have to be, you can still find lies and truths in all great stories. And finally, they're going from an emotional brokenness to an emotional wholeness. And we call that the wound that is healed. And so they're going to go from that wounded place to a healed place. Now you're thinking, well, how do they do that? Well, you can do that in all books. You can do that you know, in a bromance where it's like a buddy book, you know, where, you know, Toy Story, right? There's Woody is broken. He's wounded because Andy doesn't love him anymore. And Buzz comes in, right? And yet at the end of the story, Buzz and Woody are friends. And Woody realizes that he's still Andy's favorite because Andy wrote his name in his shoe, right? So it still can be a story of, you know, going from wounded to healed, even if it's not a romance. Now, in a romance, it's also, you know, it's really easy. Obviously, they're wounded at the beginning because they want to fall in love and they have issues in their past. And throughout the story, they are healed and through falling in love with each other. Women's fiction, same way. You can have women that heal the wound in the story of your character. So these three threads are what comprise your hero's journey throughout the course of his story. All right. By the way, I'm kind of talking fast because I don't have Rachel to kind of bounce off tonight. So if you have questions, feel free to put them in the chat and I will, you know, glance down and you can see them, or David will let me know that they're there and so I can answer them as you go. So no question is a dumb question. So please feel free to ask me anything you need. All right. So as we're moving through our story, it's really helpful for us to know the point. What is the goal of our journey, right? And so I always like to look at the end and say, okay, what am I shooting for at the end of my story? And there's three things that we're shooting for. The first one is the triumph of the external goal. So at the end of the story, we want to see our character achieve his goal. We want to see him, you know, storm the castle, take out the bad guy, you know, solve the crime, get the girl, all of those kind of things. That we want to see that external goal. That's why the scene in Lord of the Rings where Aragorn is crowned and you see the hobbits all get their due. That's a very important scene, because it's not just enough that Frodo tosses the ring into Mordor. We need to see the grand finale, the triumph that they got that. And that's what our happily ever after moment is for. We also, however, want to see our greatest dream realized. We want to see that that deep desire inside our character. And Rachel often talks about that secret desire that starts to emerge during the inciting incident, that thing that starts knocking at the door when the inciting incident happens, that sort of works to propel them on their journey. That greatest dream or secret desire needs to be realized in some way at the end. It doesn't have to be completely realized, but some piece of it. You know, for Frodo, it was going back to the Shire. For, you know, it could be that, you know, if somebody wants to be reunited with, maybe there someone's you know, a father died or something, and they want to be reunited with their father. Well, they can't, but maybe they go back and they resurrect the family farm and they find a diary or a letter, or just sitting on the farm and realizing that they've rebuilt what their father loved. You know, that sort of thing is a piece of the greatest dream. And that's what we're trying to find, is that greatest dream realized. And finally, we want to have a healing of the emotional wound. And this is something that is often found in stories, but people don't realize that they put it in. So that's kind of good because it's almost instinctive. However, it can also be left out if we're not careful. So this is just one of those things where I'm like, okay, have I healed the wound? So what I look at is my character's wound. We'll talk about what that is in a second. And I say, have I completed that? Have I healed that in some way? So again, Toy Story, Andy wrote his name on Andy's shoe. He wrote it on Buzz's shoe as well, but they all belong in the same toy box and he will never be thrown away, hopefully. All right. So this is what we're shooting for at the end. And so a lot of times when I'm writing a story, even before I start building the bio, I kind of have in mind, okay, what are those three things that I'm going to be achieving? The triumph of the external goal, the greatest dream realized, and the healing of the emotional wound. And as I'm building my character, I'm starting to think about, oh, that's how I could make him realize his greatest dream. Or, oh, that's how I could heal the wound. And I'm just kind of thinking that in my mind as I'm going forward to build my character. Now, I wanted to also talk a little bit about the ending, how this all works. So getting back to this other slide, and we are jumping into bio in just a second, but when I talk about the triumph of the external goal, the greatest dream realized, and the healing of the emotional wound, that all happens through a sequence of events, okay? And the sequence of events, so you're kind of thinking, well, how do I do all three of those things? Well, you don't have to do them all separately. They all happen as you funnel your character into the journey and into the ending. All right, so it starts with that black moment event or the realization of his greatest fear at the kind of the end of Act Two, beginning of Act Three. And it's an actual event that happens, something external on the external plot that happens. But then what happens is there's a reaction to that black moment event, and it's a black moment effect. And that's when his lie feels real. Okay, so in that moment, he takes it inward and he goes, oh my goodness, I can't believe this just happened to me. Everything I think he's on a journey of change, but he's in a journey of truth. But he thinks, oh my goodness, all the truth I have believed is a lie. And the lie feels real in that moment. And he just wants to quit and go home. And just everything is at its worst possible moment until he has his then epiphany. Okay, and the truth that comes to him, and if you've written the story right, you've had all these little truthlets that have been dropped during Act Two. You might have somebody say something to him. You might have just an aha moment for him. But that truth has a moment where it sets him free from his lies, right? And that brings your spiritual plot in many ways to a culmination, because now what's happened is that it's been used to set him free. But we're not done with the story yet, because what happens in that moment is that suddenly he's free of his fears, because once we have been set free of our lies, we're able to look at our fears and go, oh, I don't need to be afraid of that anymore. And then what happens is that we're healed of our flaw. And our flaw is, and we're going to dive more into our flaw in a second, but our flaw is often a representation, a physical, external, behavioral representation of our fears. So if you think about your flaws, you could probably track them back to a fear that you have. So, for example, an overbearing mom, someone who like calls their child constantly, even though they're in the Navy and can't talk to them, might be someone who is afraid of losing touch, or they're afraid of something bad happening to their child, or and that's a fear that they have. And maybe they fear losing someone that they love, right? So our fears cause our flaws, which then are become behavior. So if we've been set free from our lie, and if we have been freed from our fear, then what's going to happen to our flaw? It's going to go away, right? Our flaw is going to be healed, because suddenly we don't have that fear anymore. So our flaw does not need to be manifest. And the gem of this is that that's an external behavior that you can show on the page. So what happens is that your hero then does something at the end that he couldn't do at the beginning because he's been healed of his flaw. All right, so does it have to be a rational fear? Can it be crazy? It can be crazy as long as it's founded in a realistic belief. So, you know, a crazy fear of drowning. Okay, if you've never drowned before, well, then that, you know, people could be like, well, that's crazy, unless you saw someone drown, or unless you, you know, you almost drowned once in a pool. I mean, that would be not a crazy fear then. But if you have, let's see, what other kind of crazy fears could there be? It could be the crazy fear of someone touching you. Like, I used to be like on airplanes, I would hate it when I'd sit next to people because they would touch me and I always wear a jacket. And that's a weird phobia. Like, who cares, right? Well, I'd be like, well, I don't want people to touch me, because I lived in Russia, and when I got on the bus, there was no private space. And so people would like squish right next to you, and I was pregnant and it was not fun. And occasionally I get something stolen. And I hated that. So my point is that, you know, it could be a crazy fear, but grounded in something realistic, and then it becomes not crazy. It becomes realistic. Does that help? Good. So we heal our character's flaw. And then what happens is that he does two things. One is, and you can combine these to be one act, or you can have two acts, but two actions. One is he has this what's called the final battle, or the external plot culminates in him having to do something, storm the castle, we call it. But it could be, you know, sing on stage, or, you know, propose to the girl, or, you know, give up something he loves, whatever. So this final battle is part of this external plot. And so they have to go do this final external thing. Now, during the course of that, they have kind of a mini little journey as well. We call that the little final battle, where they have their lie that pops up, and then they have the truth that reminds them, and then they have their triumph, so that we know that they've really changed and that truth has really found a great footing in their heart. So that's the final, that's the external plot. But on the other side, we have that internal plot that we want to see that they've changed, right? And so that what we have them do is we have them do what I call the karaoke moment, or that thing that he can do at the end that he can't do at the beginning. And the reason I call it the karaoke moment is because I can't sing karaoke, but once I got set free from my lie, I was able to sing karaoke. And that's a huge long story that I won't go into. But just think of it as the thing you can do at the end that he can't do at the beginning. Now, that might be a grand gesture. That might be a huge sacrifice. That might be healing the wound of a hero or a heroine in their lives. And likewise, their wound is healed as well. And we end the story with that piece of their greatest dream. So it all kind of funnels together there. So I know you're thinking, well, how do I get all these threads together? If you've done them right in Act Two, they kind of braid all together at the end of your story and they weave in tightly. All right, so so therefore, to create the perfect ending, we must know a few things at the beginning in order to create our character. The first thing that we need to know is we need to know your character's dark moment story. I'll get to that in a little bit. The second thing is his greatest dream. And the third thing is his deep wound, that is the emotional or even the romantic wound. So how are we going to get there? Well, we're going to use the story equation. Yay! All right. And I've been teaching this for about a year, and I know that you guys have probably heard this before, but if you haven't, then let's talk a little bit about the story equation and how you can use it to build your great bio. All right. So what happens in the story equation? And I call it the story equation because it just helps me wrap my mind around the components that I need to have in order to build a great story. It's not actually an equation. It's more like a Venn diagram. Okay. So, and some people call it the story cookie, you know, but I like the word equation because it sort of all adds up to a great story. So think of it. So don't get freaked out by the word equation, but think of it more like the pieces or ingredients of a great story. So these are the four basic ingredients that you need to come up with while you're creating your character's bio. And that is the lie, the fear, the wound, and the secret desire. So how do we do that? Well, what I like to do is I like to start with what I call my character's identity. All right, so going back up here, you'll see identity is at the top. And I actually draw the circle. If you were at the Deep Thinkers Retreat, you did this over and over and over again. We started with a blank piece of paper. We drew a circle. We drew a line across the middle. We put identity at the top and dark moment at the bottom in the center of that circle. And what I had people do is I had them start out by telling me an adjective and a noun that described their character as they walk on the page of the story. All right, so their adjective might be, you know, beautiful or not beautiful. Usually I like to have an adjective that describes their personality. So grumpy billionaire, right? And that is who they are. So now what happens is I go, okay, tell me more about this grumpy billionaire. And so I would start following my character first by their adjective and then by their noun down until I could find some reason. So let's do that with our hero. Arrow, Oliver Queen. All right. So poor Oliver. Let me tell you about Oliver. So he is our grumpy billionaire. And I think he's actually more grumpy. Let's call him driven. He's our driven billionaire. And what happened with Oliver is that he grew up as the oldest son of a very, very wealthy family. And he was a bit of a playboy. He never took anything seriously. He went to a lot of different schools. He wooed the girls relentlessly. He drank. He did drugs. He had fast cars. He basically lived a completely irresponsible life. He had a girlfriend named Lauren, and they were getting serious. She was getting serious, and he was getting freaked out. And so when his father said, I need to take a trip across the sea to, I think he was going to China or something, he invited Oliver to go with them. And he's like, awesome. Oliver invited his girlfriend's sister. So Lauren was his girlfriend, and his sister was named Sarah. And Sarah and he had a little thing going on the side. And so Sarah went with Oliver on this boat called the Gambit into this, it was a Gilligan's Island 5-hour cruise. No, I'm kidding. It was like a 5-day cruise. I can't remember. But on this nice yacht. Well, during the course of this trip, there's a massive storm. And the yacht capsizes in a wave. Sarah is lost at sea. The yacht blows up. Oliver and his dad and this other guy get to this raft. They survive, but after a couple days of floating in the ocean, they realize, oh no, they're not going to make it. And so the father, in this crazy moment, shoots the other guy and then says, Oliver, you must stay alive for me. I'm not a good man, but you could go back and right my wrongs. And then he shoots himself and falls overboard. And so, actually, he doesn't fall overboard. He's there on the raft. And poor Oliver is like, ah! And he can't believe his father's done this, right? So he comes ashore, and 5 years later, he's on this island. So he comes ashore on this island, and part of the story is what happened during the last 5 years that he was missing. But the story opens with him being rescued from the island 5 years later. And he comes back to Star City with this goal of doing exactly what his father asked him to do, and that was to redeem the family name, take out all the bad people of Star City, and kind of repay his dad for what he did. All right, so when you're trying to understand your character, you keep asking why. So now I'm going to say, okay, Oliver, you call yourself a grumpy billionaire. Why are you grumpy? Or I use driven. Why are you driven? Well, I'm driven because my father sacrificed his life for me so that I could live. And I've come back to Star City in order to make things right. And so then I say, well, Oliver, that sounds terrible. What happened to you, to your dad, that he sacrificed his life? Well, he sacrificed his life because we were on this raft there wasn't enough people. And so somebody had to die, and it was my dad. And so I could live. Oh my goodness, that's terrible. Why were you on this raft? Well, I was on this raft because I was on this ship with my dad. And then I ask Oliver to tell me a little bit more about that. However, we're going to stop at his dark moment story, which is that moment when his father turns to him and says, Oliver, I'm not going to make it. You are. So live for me and go and fix the family name. And then he shoots himself. So horrible moment. And yet that's that dark moment for Oliver that's then suddenly going to reset his life and start him on a trajectory to becoming the person that he is. So when you're trying to drill down into your character's life, you're trying to find that dark moment story that's suddenly going to make such an impact on your character that it's going to change him forever. Now, here's the thing. It might happen when they're 5. Usually that's pretty young, 12, 14. Sometimes there's a dark moment that happens when they're 14 and then they revisit again when they're 20 and then it really solidifies. But the key to the dark moment story is that it's an actual event that happens. It's poignant, something sad about it, so that your reader or your viewer goes, oh man, that's awful. I mean, it has a real relatability to it. And that's the third thing. It is actually relatable. So, I mean, obviously none of us have ever been in a situation where we're on a raft and someone's given their life for us. Yet we can think of situations where someone has sacrificed for us. You know, everyone who's ever been a mom probably thinks about their own mother and goes, oh, my mom really sacrificed for me, right? And so that relatable situation and that poignancy of that story makes it really sit in our hearts and it makes us understand him. And that's really the key to the dark moment story, is this idea that we're now connecting with a character in a way that we can understand them. And the more we understand who our character is as an author and a reader, the more we'll have sympathy for them, the more we understand their motivation, the more we forgive them for some of the crazy things they do, like when Oliver comes back and spends the first season shooting people with his arrows. You know, so all of those kind of things work together to help your character become lovable and redeemable in your reader's eyes, and it helps you figure out the baseline of how to create it. All right, so once you get to that dark moment story, now you got to pull out a few things. So going back to our nifty little cookie, you've got your dark moment story, and you've got to pull out four things. You've got to pull out the fear, the lie, the wound, and the secret desire. So let's go back to Oliver. All right, his fear. What is his fear? Well, that's easy, that others in his family will die because of him. All right, his father already did. That's a reasonable fear. When he goes back to Star City and he starts becoming this vigilante that takes out all the bad guys, there is a real fear that someone could find him and go after his family. So that motivates his behavior both in the choices that he makes. So for a while, he's got this amazing flaw where all he does is lie to the people he knows and loves because he's trying to protect them. And even though he's doing something bad, he's lying, we understand because of his fear that he has in the past. Now, I want to say that in the very first episode of Arrow, they show this dark moment story. So we understand why. Now, he doesn't show it right away. It's about halfway through the story. But we understand why he has this great motivation. All right. Woo. All right, so his wound is more of an emotional thing. So let's go back to the dark moment story, to that piece right before it. Oliver, why were you on that raft? Well, I was on the raft because my ship sunk. Oh, did anyone die? Well, actually, yes, my girlfriend's sister died. Oh, what was your girlfriend's sister doing there? Oh, well, I was cheating on her with my, I was cheating on my girlfriend with her. Oh, and so what happens is that you start to understand he's got a lot of shame in his past, okay? And so what happens is that you start to realize why he's adverse to relationships, why he's ashamed of himself, he feels like there's a part of him that is really not a good guy because of this behavior. So that wound sits inside of him, and it determines how he sees himself. It determines how he builds up relationships with others. It determines his emotional availability, all of those kind of things. All right, Laura asked a question. How soon in a book do you want to tell your dark moment story, or you drop it piece by piece? Both and. So what you want to do, Laura, is you want to drop it a little bit in the beginning of the book, and you want to tell it usually in the second act. We usually say act 2A is a good place to tell it. I have seen it in act 2B as well, but act 2A is where you're building up all that motivation for why they're going to continue the hard stuff in act 2B. So that dark moment story is a great place at this point to build in that relationship with you and your reader, for your character and your reader and your character and other characters. And that is actually what a great dark moment story does. You want to actually tell it. You don't want to tell about it. You want them to sit down and in dialogue actually tell it to another person on the page, and so that they can see it, they can react to it, they can give the appropriate reactions, and everything that's delivered in dialogue is much, much stronger. So if you are trying to make it memorable, dialogue is the way to go. If you tell it in narrative, we kind of will sometimes skip over narrative, and we don't want them to skip over this essential dark moment story that is why our character is who he is. So tell it in dialogue, usually in the second act. However, go ahead and hint about it in the beginning, not so cryptically that it's frustrating, but not so much that you tell it. You want to save the revelation. So for example, I'm writing a story right now called Rescue Me. And this is so I've started a subplot in this story between Pete and Jess. And Jess is my heroine, and she has a huge dark moment story. But it's only the subplot, and I'm going to actually have a major plot for them in a couple stories, and I'm going to nurse this subplot along for a couple of stories. So all I did is I dropped along the idea that she was already educated and had a medical degree. She's an EMT, but nobody knows it. I dropped the story that she used to be in New York City, and she made an appearance on page 6 once. I dropped an idea that she was had no family that wanted to talk to her anymore. And I dropped the idea that her father was in prison. So these are the 4 things that I dropped. Now, at the very end of the book, I had her have a small conversation with the one person that knows her secret. And it's just enough information. You know, it's a conversation. They already know their secret. So I don't have to, like, do you remember the time when, I don't go into that. It's just, a snippet of conversation. Are you ever going to go talk to your mom again? I don't know. Maybe she'll never forgive me. But my dad's got 15 years left on a sentence. So maybe then, that sort of thing. So now we're like, So the whole idea is to whet their appetite, but don't frustrate them so much that they want to throw the book away. Give them little chunks of information, usually in dialogue, enough so that it propels the story forward, keeps them engaged until you're able to give that whole dark moment story. So does that help? Good. Thank you. Good question. All right. So finally, so we've got his deep wound, that shame of cheating on his girlfriend, his belief that he's not really a good guy. And then we also have his lie. And his lie is that he, after 5 years on the island, he is dark and broken and can't be fixed, and he can't be happy. He doesn't deserve happiness. And we're like, well, why does he believe that? But as the story starts to unfold, now I happen to like this. I've read a lot of chat boards and they don't like this, but I think it's fantastic. And it's this past present storyline where they reveal what happened in this past a little bit at a time, and then they reveal what's going on in the present. So the present has a present storyline, and the past has like 1 year at a time. So every season has 1 year of his life. So once he gets through 5 years of seasons, I guess we'll be caught up. So, but it's really, really interesting to find out why he believes this, and he's got a good reason for it. So now that we understand your character's lie, fear, and wound, now we have to also understand their secret desire. All right, so with Oliver, it was a little bit challenging to understand what the secret desire was as we were going along, but we finally got it in season two. So if you haven't seen season two yet, I would say, or maybe it was season three. I don't want to wreck anything, but obviously there's some obvious things. Obviously he wants to be worthy of his father's name, wants to clear the family's name, and he doesn't want to be broken anymore. He comes home and he sees people having these positive relationships, and he wants a positive relationship, but he doesn't with his family, maybe fall in love again, but he doesn't know how he can do that and have his secret identity. So that's one of the challenges. But we're not really convinced he wants to fall in love again until later on in, I think it's at season two, we actually see a backstory moment. And this is where we often get our character's secret desires from. We root around in their past and we say, what is one of your happiest moments or one of your greatest longings? That's another way to go at it. And we have our character tell a story about something positive that happened to them in the past. Because often it's those positive moments in our past that give us a glimpse of what we really, really want. And then we use a piece of that to create the ending. So for Oliver, he actually has a story where he goes to his mom and he's dating Lauren. So this all happens way back in the past when he's dating the girlfriend. And he says, oh, mom, he says, I did something bad. I got a girl pregnant. And of course, this was back when he was reckless and a reprobate and a playboy and not very likable. And the mom's like, oh, well, I'll take care of that. And so she gets with the woman and she says, I'll give you $1 million if you just tell Oliver you lost the baby and you move away. And the woman's like, fine. So she takes the money and she calls Oliver and says, I have lost the baby. Oliver has a moment then, in that moment, where you see his face and he's like, oh, okay, all right, is there anything I can do for you? And she's like, no. And he hangs up and you see that he actually is sad about that. He actually has this remorse. And it's not that he wanted to get married and be with her, but he sort of wanted to be the right guy. He wanted to be the good guy, and he wanted to have a family. And we see that, just a glimpse of it there. And so then what happens later on when you get to season four is that storyline picks up again and has a much bigger impact, because that's his deepest desire. So he wants to be a good guy, and it starts to sneak up on him and really comes to life in season four. So again, broken to whole, and we start to see what he really wants. So your character needs to have this secret desire, this thing inside of him that is kind of pushing him forward. So even though Oliver comes back and he's driven and he's dark and he's broken and he wants to avenge his family, that's the key. Avenge his father. He wants to keep his family's name. That's the key. He wants a family. He wants to be put back together. He missed them and he wants to have a future. And that secret desire starts to become bigger and bigger and bigger as the series goes on. In your books, it should also become bigger and bigger and stronger as your story goes along. All right. So what's your character's goal? As your character walks in the page, we have to remember that he's fully formed and he's acting in his fear, lie, and wound. Now he's motivated by his values as well as his secret desire that's pulling him forward. Now, all of these are revealed, however. You can't do it all at once. This is just way too much information to dump on your reader all at once. You need to do it slowly, okay? And we're going to be showing you how to do that next week in character layering, because we still have some more bio stuff we need to create today. But what you're going to be doing is that your character must be fully formed, because he's going to be making decisions and he's going to have motivation and everything he's doing, and it's going to move forward based on who he is today, but built through the stuff that happened in the past. All right, so look, I'm going to drink here and then we'll keep going. All right. Now, what we need to do is we still have to create. We're not done creating our character. We still have a few other things that we need to create. The first one, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to build that story equation so that we can find goals, motivation, and conflict. Now, goals are that external spine. Motivation is why he's doing what he's doing, of course. And conflict is the key to a great story. You've got to have conflict so that there's roadblocks that cause tension, right? So how do we do that? Well, this is the full-fledged story cookie here. And we're going to add in a few things. We're going to add in his flaw, which we talked about. We're going to add in competing values. We're going to add in what he wants. And we're going to add in the simple why. All right. So how does that work? So as we add, so we've got our basics. We've got our lie, fear, wound, secret, desire. Now we're going to add in that flaw. And I talked about that already. It's his external behavior that reveals his fears. So what happens is that when you're looking at trying to find a great flaw, and I wouldn't have so many flaws of your character that you're like, wow, I can't keep track of them all. I'd have like one major flaw or a couple flaws maybe. But you want to find, look at his fear and say, what's a logical flaw that could result in that? And how can I show it? Like, if you don't want a flaw that you can't show, like, you know, his flaw that you can show, I don't know, help me out here. Like flaws that are easy to show are things like he doesn't trust someone, he's aloof because he doesn't want to be in contact with people, he is, you know, he's impulsive, you could show that. Oh, quick to judge. Thank you, Mary. Yay, Mary. Yes, quick to judge. That's kind of a hard flaw to show because, first of all, it makes him A, unlikable, but two, he's maybe on the inside doing it, but you want to show it externally, right? And so, but in today's society, it's not good to be quick to judge, right? So that could be a great way to show. That's a harder flaw to show, but that's a good one. So you'd have to like show him, if that was his flaw, you'd have to show him judging people in a way that didn't make him completely unlikable and yet still showed that he had that flaw. In fact, interestingly enough, Mary, I'm glad you brought that up because that's the flaw of my current character, Sam. And I really struggled with that because at the beginning, I didn't want Sam to be unlikable, but he wasn't quick to judge others. He was only quick to judge his brother. So that's the change I made, is that I made him really charitable with other people, but not charitable to his brother because of something that happened. And that gave me enough of his flaw to build that in. So good idea. Competing values. Okay. Competing values are those things that your character has that causes inner dissonance. So if your character has a desire to be independent, and yet he also has, or self-sufficient, and yet also a desire to be compassionate to others, you might have some problems if, you know, maybe somebody was trying to be compassionate to him. So maybe compassion is one of his values. He likes to show compassion to others, but he is unable to receive it himself because he likes to be self-sufficient. So the idea is that two values, so we're always driven by our values, right? The things that we believe are important, even if we don't necessarily live them out in our lives, we still feel like they're important. So, you know, it could be fiscal responsibility and eating healthy. Okay, these are two common values that people might have. Well, eating healthy is expensive. Going organic and all that kind of stuff is very expensive, and that can compete with fiscal responsibility when you can't afford it, right? So we always have this sort of balancing act. We're going to choose this today and choose that tomorrow. And it's the same way with your character. They're going to have these two values that sort of push them forward. So if your character, so Oliver's values are his family very much. He wants to protect them, but it's also his desire to save Star City, right? So at certain times, he has to choose one or the other. So his mother's like, hey, can you come to this special event that we're having at the house? A political event because I'm running for mayor. And he's all like, sure, mom. And then a bad guy comes and he's like, oh no, I must put on the green suit and go save the world. So one of these two things is going to have to give, either his job or his family. One of the great moments of this is when one of his cohorts, Diggs, is running after somebody that Diggs has a personal vendetta against. He killed his brother. And Arrow is running after the guy that is the bad guy. And suddenly Diggs is like, I need your help. I need your help. And so suddenly it's friendship against getting the bad guy, right? And Arrow, I don't want to tell you what he chooses because then I don't want to give it away. But the point is that the choice he makes has repercussions. And that's exactly how it should happen in your story. Your characters always make it a choice of his actions based on his values. And there should always be repercussions to his actions. So when you have two equally worthy values and they compete against each other, that creates great tension. So you always want to, and so aside from motivation, it always creates tension. So you want to, oh, and you're always looking for tension in your story. So if you choose two great motivations, then you can always start to build that inner tension. All right, the why. The why has to be just a quick motivation. His quick motivation is, why does he want to save the world? Because his family hurt it and he needs to fix it. Quick and easy motivation. And that kind of is the motivation that you're kind of going to use as what I call the surface motivation. There's lots and lots of layers that go on. But when your character walks on the page, that's going to be his quick motivation that he's going to give. You know, Oliver, why are you wearing a green suit and running around with arrows? Well, because there's bad guys and my parents were the ones that created these bad guys. So now I have to fix it. Now there's a lot of other reasons because, you know, he's broken because he spent 5 years on an island, because there's bad guys everywhere, because he feels guilt about his father, because he feels shame about the way he behaved, because he wants a better life, you know, all of these kind of things. But we don't get into that right away because that's part of building the bio and layering the story out. So we need a quick and easy motivation as your character starts the page. And that's what we have from the story cookie. And finally, we have the want. All right. The want is that secret desire that surfaces into an external goal. So what happens is that your character has a secret desire, but the secret desire is internal. We need something external because the external goal is what we're going to use to cause tension. Remember? So if you don't have an external goal, then you won't have any obstacles because, you know, if it's all internal, then you won't, you know, all your obstacles are internal. So you need an external goal, external obstacles so that you can create tension. And tension is created by the motivation for the external goal versus the strength of the obstacle that they're coming against. So the stronger the motivation and the stronger the bigger the obstacle, the more tension that you have, right? So the want always needs to, you always need to follow up the want to find that external goal. So, you know, Oliver's want is to redeem his family name and to repay his father for sacrificing his life. So his goal then becomes take out the bad guys and become a vigilante. Now this works really well because what happens is that with that external goal comes certain steps. He's going to have to find a lair. So that means he has to go back to his old family's, they had this old building. So he fixes up the building, but now he needs a cover story. So he decides to open up a nightclub, which means he's got to staff it, which means that he's got to lie to people about what he's doing, which means he needs people to run it. And, you know, so now he's got all these goals that he has all because he wants to become this vigilante. So having an external goal helps you figure out all the little goals that you can create in your story. And then it also helps you figure out, okay, what is the trajectory of my story going to be? All right, hopefully that makes sense. I have seen stories without external goals and they just sort of fall flat. They're just meandering around the page. So if you feel like your story is a little bit meandering, just ask yourself, what is my character's external goal? What are they shooting for? Give it something tangible, measurable. What is it? SMART goal, specific, measurable, active, something else. Lisa Jordan would know it all. But the point is that it's something that we can see, something that's timely, something that needs to happen. All right. So what happens then is that if you do the story cookie, you can pull out all of these other pieces that you're going to need for your story, right? So your competing values and your flaw helps kind of pull out the sacrifice that they have later. Competing values and their want helps you figure out your internal and external conflict. Your want and your why helps you figure out your goal or your noble quest. Your happily ever after ending, it comes from your wound. And that your greatest, and oh, right there should be a secret desire. And your breakup, by the way, if you're writing a romance, the breakup is always about opening up that wound again. And so if you're writing a romance, you must have a wound. All right, so let's keep going though, because there's a few, so now you're like, wow, Susie, are you kidding me? There's all these things I need to do. I got a trick for you. Here's my trick. I tell myself a billion stories. All right, so I sit down, and you've already heard me talk about this, but this is my real, real secret here. And I talk about this in Essential Scenes, and I'm going to be talking about this in Layering, but I have a number of stories that my characters tell me so I can really start to understand them. So the first one, of course, is the Dark Woman story, which we already talked about, and that is the key. You cannot write a story without a Dark Woman story. So if you just do the one story, do that story. I also like to add in the happiest moment story so I can kind of figure out what he wants, what's his secret desire, how am I going to build that ending. If it's a romance, I talk about the one who got away. If he's never been in love, I talk about why he's never been in love. Did he never have a crush? Did he never desire anyone? So I talk about that. But I want to know what their romantic history is so I can figure out what their issues are and how we're going to solve them. And I can also figure out their wound. Now, sometimes the wound for a romance is separate from the Dark Moment story cookie. Sometimes I have my own little romantic Dark Moment story and build that as well. It just depends on the story that I'm building. But it is important to have that sort of, you know, if you're writing a romance, who got away, why, and how. Also, if I like to have my hero story or what do I want to be when I grow up and why I am who I am. So it's the story of someone who's inspired them or why they became a police officer or why they became a snowboarder or why they became a Navy SEAL or, you know, whatever it is, some sort of little snippet. And it's not a huge long story, but I just want to know why did you become this profession? So, you know, obviously with Oliver, why are you a vigilante? Well, because it seems like the police aren't doing their job and it's the only way to get the job done is to do it underhandedly like this. And then, you know, obviously if you go watch the series, you know, you can go back to a man who actually saved him with a bow and arrow, his hero, kind of. And so what happens is that, oh, okay, that's how I got the use of the bow and arrow. I became this great fighter because of this guy. And now I'm going to emulate him. Now, another one is the time I nearly had what I wanted and what stood in my way. Okay, so it's this idea that we have a glimpse of the greatest dream or a glimpse of what we really, really want. And my hero, if he has, sometimes we don't have this, but sometimes we have a moment where your hero was so close to getting what he wanted and then he didn't get it. And he has to have, and we often tell this story in the second half of Act Two, when he's talking about his flaw and why he can't get what he wants and what he really, really wants. And it really helps us understand that who our character, what he really wants what's really driving him. And, you know, sometimes it can be a story about the time that he nearly gave this great presentation, but his tongue got tied and he was not able to do it. And now he feels like he can't stand up and give a speech anywhere. Actually, I got this idea from the King's Speech is one of the things I got it from. And so he will tell stories about how he wanted to talk to people and he couldn't, and he gets shut away in his life. And so having a story like this kind of adds into that layer of longing for your character, longing for him to achieve what he longs for. And then finally, I have the time I was scared to death, the hint of the greatest fear. And you can kind of weave that into the Dark Moment story if you want. But sometimes it shows a character's vulnerability. If he tells the heroine or some other character, oh my goodness, I can't remember. I can't believe this time when I was scared to death. Now, you could also put those last two together, like especially if you're talking about a policeman who, you know, is trying to capture someone and that person turned on him and nearly, you know, captured him, that sort of thing. Oliver has a lot of those, the time I was scared to death stories. And he also has a couple of the time I nearly had what I wanted stories where he almost got rescued and you see that longing and then it gets pulled away from him. So I always like to add in those last two and just see if I can work them into the story. I might not need them, but it does show their longing and it just show their vulnerability. And by the way, when we make our heroes vulnerable, it becomes a really attractive thing. It shows that they're not invincible and we want heroes that'll be just a little bit weak sometimes. All right. Let's talk a little bit about identity versus essence. Okay, so your character starts out the story with an identity. But he really has two pieces to himself. He's got that external identity, that person that he is on the outside. Arrow is complicated because he is a billionaire playboy on the outside, and he's rich, and everything seems to be going his way. Superpowers that he has money. I would say that he's also very much Arrow on the outside. He's a superhero. He can beat anybody up. He's a strategist. That's his superpower, is that he's always strategizing and he can figure things out. But on the inside, you've got this essence. All right. And the essence is this man that really wants to be both sides. He wants to be loved. He wants to be, he wants people to know who he is, even though he's keeping the secret. He doesn't want to lie to his family. He wants to be known and seen. And his secret desire starts to peek out when he starts to tell people who he is, and the relief. There's this wonderful moment when he tells his sister who he is, and her reaction is just priceless. And then his real essence happens when he has his karaoke moment. So for Oliver, his karaoke moment is when he tells his best friend in the first season who he is. And it's this huge thing, because he wasn't going to be able to do that. And so he wants to, and he has to, in order to save the day. So the point is that your character is on the page as you start your story, this external identity. But the internal identity starts to peek out throughout the story, until at the very end, he is walking in who he is, right? So some questions you can ask. What is your character's identity when the story opens? What is her essence, or who is she on the inside that she or he will become? It's that secret desire. What is their superpower? What is he good at? What is their competence? That's something that we would see on the external. And then also, again, you want to ask yourself, what can your character do in the end that he can't do in the beginning? If you have an answer for that, then you know you've completed the journey of your character. If you haven't gotten an answer for that, then you have to go back and you have to go, okay, we haven't had enough of a character change here. All right. So in order to make your reader care, you also have to ask what's at stake. And we often start with the external stakes. And then as the story progresses, they become internal or even romantic. So this picture here is actually at the end of season 3. And this is where Oliver is in his true essence, I believe, and where he's exactly the person that he wants to be. And so, but what's at stake for Oliver up until this point is that first it's his city, then it becomes his identity, and then it becomes his relationships, and then finally it becomes his romance with, well, I don't want to give it away, but anyway, I kind of did because you see who she is. So the point is that in order to make your reader care about your character, you need to always have stakes flowing throughout your story. And again, they start externally and then they slowly go internal. Now, you might also have external stakes at the end as well, but we start to care about a character more and more, and therefore the internal stakes become more and more important. At the beginning, internal stakes aren't that important to us because we really don't know your character. So it's the external stakes that matter. But at the end, it's those internal stakes that really start to matter. All right. So as you're building your story, you need to remember, you need to build it upon their identity, find their dark moment story, find from the dark moment story, you find the fear, the lie, the wound, and the secret desire, often from a greatest dream story. You might have a couple of those other stories that I taught you that you might want to pull out, especially the stories that show his romantic past, his vulnerabilities, and his greatest longing. And then as you start your story, you want to layer in competing values, his flaw, his external behavior that shows his fear. You want to layer in his want in the form of an external goal. And you want to start thinking about the wound that you're going to heal and that greatest desire that you're going to fulfill at the end of the story. Now, as you start your story, you want to remember, you want to start with intrigue or danger. We talked about that early in February when we talked about the job of an author. So we want to start right away with that intrigue, that curiosity, and that danger. So Arrow actually starts with a guy running on this island. He's got long, shaggy hair, and he's wearing a green hood. And the ship kind of pulls up, and he runs up. And he's on this mountaintop, and he takes his arrow, and he shoots it, and this big, huge fire lights from a SOS kind of blaze, right? And so now and that's how it starts. You're like, woo, what's going on with that? In the next scene, immediately our character, so that was kind of intrigue or danger. In the very next scene, you see this guy standing at a window, and there's outside this room, there's a doctor standing there, and this woman comes up, she rushes up to him, and the doctor says, listen, he's got like a dozen broken bones and 80% of his body has scars, and he's been through so much, and he hasn't said a word, so we don't know what shape he's in. And she's like, oh, but it's Oliver. And so he walks in, and he turns around, and you know, you have this wonderful reunion with Oliver and his mom, and you really feel for him because he's been through a lot. We don't know what he's been through. He's had a lot of trauma, and you know, with his broken bones and his scars, and he does have a lot of scars. And he's in his mother's arms for the first time in 5 years. So hugely sympathetic situation that they started us out in. And now we start to get into the story and figure out who he is and what he's all about. And that's when we start to unlawyer him. So we figure out then how he goes from, you know, kind of this really, I love Stephen Amell's acting because he goes from this totally lame, like totally weak character at the beginning of at the beginning of the 5 years to this fairly well-built superhero at the end. So it's a great transformation, and watching that transformation happen is really fun. All right, next week, here's what we're going to do. So this was just sort of part one of building that strong bio, but now I'm going to teach you next week how to build the layers out of that bio. And then how to reveal your character throughout the story. So I know you're like, okay, what do I do with all this information? Just gather it, hang on to it, build your character. And next week, we're going to go through, I'm going to show you the different layers of your character, and then how to sort of peel him back throughout the story so that your reader will fall in love with him. All right. Do you guys have any questions? Is there a Frasier contest this year? There is not. Because of complications in my personal life with my mom's passing, I was not able to get that going this year. I'm really sorry about that. We just couldn't get the judges and everything lined up. And so we've decided to take a year off. So, and that'll be fine. You guys can work on your manuscripts for next year, and hopefully we'll have it back up and running next year. But unfortunately it wasn't going to happen this year. But we still are going to be at ACFW in August. I hope you guys will be there. And, we'll have our booth there and celebrating all of our members and stuff like that. So anyway, Deb asked a question. I know external stakes, internal stakes. Internal stakes are things like, will you lose the love of your life? Will you ever say goodbye to the person you love? Will you be able to forgive the person that hurt you? These kind of things. These are internal stakes. Good. All right. Well, I appreciate you guys being there. Any final questions? David did well tonight. He's a hero. All right. Thanks so much for being here, you guys. I hope that you have a great and wonderful Easter, and celebrate the risen Lord and risen Savior. Have a great, great week, and I will see you next week. And until then, go write something brilliant.